found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. The Maria Sanchez Show. Current events, newsmakers, lifestyle, health, relationships, entertainment. Miss a day? Download the podcast at LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning. This is Maria Sanchez. We're live. It's Thursday, July 18th. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you, Linda O'Brien, for your amazing voiceover work. We are live every weekday morning, Monday through Friday at 9 o'clock Pacific on latalkradio.com, channel 2. And then later that day, we post the podcast and the contact information of all of our guests, also at latalkradio.com, MariaSanchezShow.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher as well. So there's lots of ways that you can catch us. On the program this morning, we're honored to have State Senator Fran Pavley visit with us. She is going to be talking about her legislation that was introduced that is SB 40, and she's going to visit with us about what's the progress and how that is going on. What happened with SB 40 is that it has passed certain hurdles, and so they are taking it to the next step, and she's going to share with us what that's all about. Then we also have our visit from Kiki T. She's our the world's only astrosexologist. She's visiting with us because the zodiac signs are changing, and she's going to let us know about that as well. But today is Nelson Mandela International Day. The United Nations declared that July 18th would be Nelson Mandela International Day. They did that in 2009. And so South Africa has been celebrating all day today. He is 95 years of age. He's still in the hospital, but the doctors say that he is steadily improving from a six-week lung infection. He was admitted in June 8th. The president of South Africa, Jacob Zuma, visited him at the hospital and said, "I was able to say happy birthday to him," and he was able to smile. There are going to be, they say, in nearly 20 U.S. cities today, ceremonies around Capitol Hill in Washington, and there are going to be speeches from figures such as former U.S. President Bill Clinton. So it's a day of joyous celebration. They call him the father of Africa, and how wonderful, how fortunate should we be to be doing such great things and to be honored in our lifetimes. And obviously he didn't do it to do that, but South Africa celebrated today with 67 minutes of public service to honor the 67 years that he served humanity by first fighting against white minority rule and then consolidating racial harmony when he was president. So he was voted in 1994. And 4 years prior to that, in 1990, he had been released after 27 years spent in prison. Talk about perseverance. I can't imagine. 18 of them at the notorious Robben Island penal colony. They're saying there still are enormous gaps in the country in between income, employment, access to education. But and then all this figure staggering. White households in last year in 2012 earn on average six times more than the black households. However, quality education and employment opportunities have opened up for tens of thousands of blacks, meaning that the Rainbow Nation, as they call it, became a reality as universities got integrated and in major city suburbs. A new professional class of college-educated blacks has been moving into once almost exclusively white neighborhoods. So happy birthday to Nelson Mandela. Also, happy birthday, my nephew has his birthday today. So he's turning 31, or did turn 31, I should say. So it's all good in that regard. We also have the Rolling Stone is in the news. Why? Because tomorrow their latest issue is going on to the newsstand, and on it they have the cover. On the cover is the picture of the Boston Marathon bombing suspect Zahar Tsarnaev. And why is this creating controversy? Because they're saying they're idolizing somebody, excuse me, who is a killer or allegedly so. And so it's creating all kinds of controversy. Now, what is happening with the controversy and why is because he pleaded not guilty last week to the 30 counts of federal the indictment. And if the government decides to seek capital punishment, he could face the death penalty if convicted on one of the 17 counts. So what is happening now with this Rolling Stone cover with Zahar Tsarnaev is that there are at least five retailers who are saying that they will not carry the issue in their stores. They are CVS, Walgreens, Rite Aid, Stop and Shop, the grocery chain Roche Brothers, and Tadeshi Food Shops. Critics of the cover include Boston Mayor Tom Menino and Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick. Menino wrote a letter to the publisher, Jan Werner, about the celebrity treatment and called the cover ill-conceived at best. His quote is, "The survivors of the Boston attacks deserve Rolling Stone cover stories, though I no longer feel that Rolling Stone deserves them." So for its part, Rolling Stone issued a statement yesterday saying the story was part of its long-standing commitment to serious and thoughtful coverage of the most important current political and cultural issues. Their quote is, "The fact that Zahar Tsarnaev is young and in the same age group as many of our readers makes it all the more important for us to examine the complexities of this issue and gain a more complete understanding of how a tragedy like this happens." So it went onto social media yesterday with lots of people actually condemning it on Twitter and whatnot, on the tweets that were being sent. And it's so Tuesday, Rolling Stone did a blog posting detailing five revelations in the story by contributing editor Janet Reitman, including Tsarnaev's increasing devotion to Islam while still in high school, as well as his older brother, Tamerlan Tsarnaev's possible mental illness, which the boy's mother decided would be better treated by Islam than by psychiatrists. Then yesterday, social media goes all over about it. And then today, the retailers are saying that they're not going to carry this issue because of the pain and suffering that the community is feeling about it. So I'm obviously, you know, free speech, free right to free press, et cetera. I think the story deserves to be told, but I don't believe that he should be on the cover. It's also the photo that is on the cover is a tousle-haired, thinly goateed Tsarnaev, and it's one that he posted online of himself, and it's been picked up by the outlets. But and they say it's reminiscent of the magazine's shots of rock and roll royalty like The Doors, Jim Morrison, and Bob Dylan. So it hits the newsstand tomorrow. They did, it sounds like, an amazing job with the story. It features interviews from childhood friends, teachers, and law enforcement agents. And it says that it promises to reveal how a popular, promising student was failed by his family, fell into radical Islam, and became a monster. That's their quote from that. So if you want it, it'll be available mañana. So here's an interesting story that was revealed late yesterday. Devout married Catholics have the best sex of any demographic group. This is according to the Family Research Council, and they shared this at an event yesterday. So they relied heavily on the statistics from the University of Chicago's last National Health and Social Life Survey, which was conducted in 1992, which found the most enjoyable and most frequent sex occurring among married people, those who attended church weekly, any church, whether Catholic or not, and people who had the least sexual partners. And the quote from Patrick Fagan, a senior fellow at the Family Research Council and a former George H.W. Bush official, says, "Those who worship God weekly have the best sex. I want to see this on the cover of Playboy sometime." So they're saying that Catholics having better sex isn't new news, that in 1994, Andrew Greeley, who is a Catholic sociologist and priest and author, if you follow his books, he wrote something called Sex, the Catholic Experience, which had a whole bunch of statistics supporting that, saying 68% of Catholics say they have sex at least once a week versus 56% of non-Catholics. 30% of Catholics had bought erotic underwear versus 20% non-Catholics. and 80% of devout Catholic women approve of having sex for pleasure alone. Also in 2008, another story from Gregory K. Popcak, who is a Catholic pastoral marriage and family counselor. He published a book, and it was called Holy Sex, A Catholic Guide to Toe-Curling, Mind-Blowing, Infallible Loving. So that's in light of this New York Times piece this week that talked about the hookup culture at the University of Pennsylvania. And so Catholics, of which I am, got to be married, though, of which I'm not, having the best sex. Okay, changing the way that we do business and changing the way that we do entertainment is Netflix, with their where you get series on demand, and they have House of Cards, and they have Arrested Development, and they have Hemlock Grove. Well, they made news because they got nominated for Emmys. So they landed a total of 14 nominations, and they're saying that they're making new news. It's the first time programs not produced specifically for television have won Emmy nominations in the top categories. House of Cards competing for Best Drama, and leading stars Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright in the Best Actor and Actress group. So it's, I think it's awesome, and it's similar to what we're doing with our radio program, Terrestrial Radio, which is your conventional one, AM and FM. It's being challenged now by folks like us doing programs like this and finding our own way of reaching out to you and finding you in our lives. So they said FX's American Horror Story Asylum got 17 nominations, including Best Miniseries, and HBO's Game of Thrones got 16 nominations. Last year's winner, Homeland, was nominated in 11 categories, including Best Drama. In the comedy category, NBC's 30 Rock got 13 nominations for its last season, and ABC's Modern Family got 12 nominations, and HBO's movie Behind the Candelabra got 15 nominations, including Michael Douglas as Liberace and Matt Damon as his lover. They are both in the lead actor series in a miniseries. So that change in the way we're doing business. And now we're pleased and very honored to have Senator Fran Pavley on the line with us. Senator Pavley, good morning and welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show.
Good morning to you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your time. I know you're so busy and you're in the news now, it seems, all the time. I don't know why, but I guess it must be this SB4 that you've got in front of it. I understand that it passed the Assembly Natural Resources Committee on July 1st, and it's going to the Assembly Appropriations Committee next month.
That is correct, and then hopefully on to the Assembly floor, back to the State Senate for what we call concurrence and any amendments that were taken in the Assembly to the original bill, and then hopefully on to the governor.
So tell us why you felt the need, because there was lots of legislation that was produced, and yours is the only one that has survived. What is it about hydraulic fracturing, or fracking as it's also called, that made it so legislatively imperative?
Well, several reasons. First of all, from my perspective, I chair the Natural Resources and Water Committee, and water quality and potential contamination of groundwater basins was my primary reason for getting involved. And then way back in 2011, after hearing more and more about fracking and following what was happening in the northeast part of the country, I wrote a letter to DOGGR, that stands for the Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Recovery. That's a small agency inside our Department of Conservation. I wrote a letter to them just asking a little bit about fracking in California. What wells are being fracked? What was the source of water they were using? What happens to the waste fluids? Has there been contamination of groundwater basins? What chemicals are you using? And their answer in a letter to responded to, back to me was, we don't know, we don't keep records. So that was not acceptable, because even though California has used fracking before, this is a lot different. We've discovered potentially 15.4 billion barrels of oil below our Monterey Shale. And there's new technologies, such as horizontal flat drilling, where you can drill in one place and then have a horizontal drill go along below into the Monterey Shale for up to 2 to 3 miles in any one direction. So most homeowners and landowners don't own the mineral rights down below. And so you know, the trade-off between supplying and meeting our petroleum needs for our cars and our economy versus contaminating our air and water is a subject that deserves attention, and that's why 10 people introduced bills this year.
So I understand that what is going on in the Northeast, like even North Dakota, which is in the Midwest, that they do, it's more water intensive than what California does. So that's a comparison to North Dakota versus California might not be fair, because I understand that there are some ill side effects that North Dakota is experiencing with their fracking. Can you speak to that?
To some extent. I'm not an expert, but you're right. Northeast is mostly natural gas, not quite the same comparison. And North Dakota is oil, the Balkan shale. Different geology to some extent, but you're right, from what I've read anyway, they use a lot more water per frack job than we do.
And they were saying, we had a guest on from the Western States Petroleum Association, and they were saying that we in California use much less water, and according to them, we used an average of 116,000 gallons of water as opposed to millions of gallons of water that other states use. So you're not necessarily concerned about the amount of water that is consumed with the process of fracking, but more about the potential contamination of the groundwater in the process of fracking.
I'm primarily concerned about the contamination of the groundwater, not just during the frack job, but potentially afterwards as fissures open up, whether through seismic activity down the road or other potential problems relating to structural integrity of the well casing. And now that we found out that it's not just 95% water with a few percent chemicals and some sand, it's potentially large amounts and use of acid. And that's particularly of interest to people who live in Ventura County, because it's been quoted in the paper that Venico and Occidental are using acid as their primary way to open up fissures underground and get to this new oil deposit in the Monterey Shale.
So is acidization different than fracking?
It can be both. It can be used in fracking, and there's other well stimulation techniques, and that's why I amended my bill about a month or so ago after having a hearing to make sure that we don't get trapped into chasing the technology of today and not looking out for the long-term potential changes. I mean, this is sort of a gold rush out there, and the oil companies are coming up with new technologies. They're really experimenting with acid matrix, and I'm not an expert on what all this means, but at the end of the day, I think it's very important to have in place the criteria and agencies able to track this, let the public know what chemicals or what formula is being used, such as acid, for well stimulation purposes. The public should know where the wells are. They should be able to ask for a monitor or baseline of the groundwater table before and after fracking, with a groundwater monitoring plan that would go on for years afterwards in case there is a problem. And so disclosure, regulatory oversight, transparency are all part of my goals, with the end being that we're not trading off oil expansion for environmentally degrading our water quality and water supply. I am concerned about, frankly, using clean potable water, and I've asked the oil companies, and will be part of my independent study that's required as part of this bill, looking at why we can't use recycled water or treated wastewater and not clean water that can be used for homes or agricultural purposes.
So your bill is multifaceted and multi-pronged.
It's very comprehensive. We've spent an incredible amount of time on this, partly due to the frustration that this agency, Dogger, had not really kept pace and gotten out in front of this issue. And we are trying to push the administration and them that to become more responsive to the public's concerns. We've also required Dogger to formalize what's called MOUs, Memorandums of Understandings, mm-hmm. with the State Water Board, the Regional Board, the Air Boards, and Air Districts, so that all that information regarding what chemicals and where the wells are being fracked are readily available to those agencies who have responsibility and have expertise in regulating environmental problems in the state, getting them involved. For example, the South Coast Air District has already adopted regulations relating to fracking and concern about ozone and methane and other pollutants that are getting into the air.
So if your bill passes, will the procedure be not only regulated but streamlined so that when someone says that they're fracking, that means the same thing regardless of the entity that's doing the procedure?
Regardless of the, and if it's fracking, you mean do you have to know which oil company? Is that what you're asking?
No, it's just, will SB4 regulate how the process will unfold?
It will regulate disclosure, where it is, what chemicals are being used, where the waste fluid is stored, and those kinds of basic issues under what I think is important for the public's right to know.
I guess I'm asking is, will it be standardized so that if one company is doing it, they're doing
yes,
it the same way as
absolutely.
The next company? Okay, so that you're asking.
No, well, each company could have different, potentially, chemical makeup of what they're using for fracking. Those are, you know, it's competitive in the oil business, and so everyone's trying to sort of outdo the others, so to speak. And so that may be different from one frack job to the other, depending upon the company that is using fracking in that particular location.
As long as they conform to the constraints that your
correct.
Legislation
correct.
Is going to dictate.
Full disclosure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now,
I have to tell you, as this bill is the last one standing, potential problems, we're starting to see some pushback on wanting to amend, that means change some of the proposed regulations in this bill. I'm very reluctant to weaken this bill in any way, open to amending it if it accomplishes that same goal of protecting the public's health and safety and the right to know. So stay tuned on this one, because the oil companies are extremely powerful in Sacramento, yet I think they know that if the public should have no concern about fracking, they need to prove it, and the only way to prove it is the regulatory and transparent oversight by responsive government agencies.
Now, the information that the Western States Petroleum Association provided to me said that there's only a 0.5% of chemical additives to the process. They said 90%
was water.
Too. Uh-huh. Okay.
About 95% water.
Right.
And I've heard from 0.5% to 3% on the chemical makeup.
So that's what I'm curious about. The fact sheet that I have in front of me, it says 90% water, 9.5% sand, and then 0.5% chemical additives, and they go through what those are. Mm-hmm. That sounds like that may also change depending on who's doing what. So
exactly. For example, we've heard that 15 to 20% could be acid being used.
Which is a big difference from 0.5%. So
that's right. Hydrochloric acid or hydrofluoric acid are the two types of acid. You know, this is somewhat in the experimental stage as this potential sort of bonanza of gold fields lie under the ground, that they're looking at the easiest and most probably cost-effective way to access that.
Now, Senator, I would like to say you are not against it. You're not trying to ban it. You're just trying to regulate it.
I'm trying to deal with the reality in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And the ban bills and moratorium bills that were proposed for example, in the assembly got about 21 or 2 votes, and you need 41 to pass. And my feeling has been, let's regulate it. Let's make it transparent, because part of it is the rightful concern by the public. And then we will actually know and have evidence if there are problems, and then we can do something about them.
And do you see this as partisan at all?
It is at the moment. The Republicans haven't voted for it yet, but they're not in the debates in the committees, other than saying things like, show me where there's been a pollution of the groundwater. And if you can't show anyone where that is because it's not reported, or maybe it, and there isn't any, for example, a website that we're requiring where the public can monitor what's going on, then that's a problem. We do know in a hearing that a supervisor from Santa Barbara County, relating to their groundwater basin, and they're not tied into the state water project, so actually every drop of water is critically important in other parts of the state. All of a sudden, the groundwater basin was being depleted. It was because someone in the groundwater basin leased their mineral rights, and they were using water for fracking, and it did mm-hmm. make a difference. So, mm-hmm. you know, not one size fits all here, and when they say small amount of water, it depends upon where that's coming from. Maybe overall statewide it's not a huge amount, but it could be incredibly important to that particular jurisdiction.
Community. Now, what's the labyrinth that you have to navigate now?
Two things. Constant communication with the administration, because I'm usually an author that tries not to carry a bill if it's just going to be vetoed at the end of the long process.
Uh-huh.
I'm hoping this bill will be signed and go into effect January 1st of next year with the full regulations adopted and a permitting process in place by January 1st of 2015. So there are negotiations with all the stakeholders, some of the environmental communities, the administration, yes, the oil companies. And at the same time, I have to figure out how to navigate this through the Appropriations Committee. We don't think there will be any state costs to the general fund, because we are suggesting in the bill that any costs associated with the website, or whether it's the independent study or the groundwater monitoring plan, all be paid by a per barrel fee assessed to the oil companies.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would go on to the floor of the assembly. So right now there's a list of opposition, State Chamber of Commerce, which is interesting, because why would you support something that might contaminate the groundwater supply with the agricultural economy being very key to the state as well, and the oil companies and a list of others.
But the support seems to outweigh the opposition. 2-1
right
or 3-1.
Right now, some of the opposition is sort of nuanced. In fact, we have had good discussions with the oil companies, because their goal was, yes, they see there's going to be a regulatory approach to hydraulic fracturing or similar oil well stimulation techniques. We are debating sort of the definition of what that means, because I want to make sure it includes use of acid in large amounts as well. And then we're debating whether they have to be issued a very formal permit by Dogger. Some concern about what that means. And then who's the best entity for developing a long-term groundwater monitoring plan, so that we're not just looking at fracking right before and right after it occurs, but long-term implications.
Now, what happens to the process in the interim while your legislation is still going through its needs?
This is a very engaged process right now with Department of Conservation and Dogger and the administration and all the players. So takes an incredible amount of time. And then if the bill or once the bill passes, then slowly these different components of it will start being put into place. It takes a while to do that. And also, technically, bills don't become law until January 1st of the following year. But in the meantime, I know Dogger is moving in this direction as far as notification of 30 days and keep updating their own plans to try to reflect some of the parts of this particular piece of legislation. So it will require, you know, things can't be done just overnight as far as regulations, because that requires public hearings and transparency and, you know, due public process, which is correct. But in the meantime, yes, they can continue as they are now, picking up permits for...
Hi, we got a little bit of a technical thing, but we were resolved. My question to you, Senator Pavley, is that let's say best case scenario, everything gets done as you would like. We have the regulations in effect. We have everybody signed on to the agreement. We've got 15.4 billion barrels of oil able to be taken advantage of. What might that do to the state?
If it's done, we're going to say, if it's done safely, and we're making an assumption they can access the 15.4 billion barrels. We don't know if the technologies or the geologic formations readily avail themselves to it. With $4 a gallon gasoline, it's obviously right now cost effective, which is driving the interest here. And so what that would mean, my responsibility is providing the legislative oversight to make sure it's done safely. I'm also working to try to reduce dependence on oil, being the author of many of the clean energy pieces of legislation in the past, by promoting use of public transportation, but also alternative fuel vehicles and reducing the carbon intensity in the fuel supply. And so it's this bill is, again, sort of a response to fracking, and also addressing the concerns of the public. But being realistic about California has 28 million cars on the road plus trucks. We can either import oil or join many of our efforts in trying to reduce how much oil our state uses, whether we're importing it or having a supply more readily available in California, but not without compromising our environment.
But what I understand is that we as a state would not have to need foreign oil for at least 50 years.
And that's, for many people, that's certainly one of the aspects of fracking that has some support in some areas. And the public will say, and it's been shown in polls, they aren't opposed because we have oil drilling going on, obviously, for decades in California. But it has to be done safely because we know we have spent how many billions of dollars, let alone lots of lives, over our addiction to oil. And 50% of our oil is coming from foreign countries, many of them who don't have our best interest in mind.
And then there was that USC study that said that they're projecting hundreds of thousands of jobs and billions in economic growth and new tax revenue. I mean, it sounds like it, if it's done properly.
We are concerned about the jobs. Here's the thing. Are our workers, do they have the skills with this new technology? Part of the concern is, will these jobs just be coming from other states who have sort of are out in front of this oil boom, if you will, relating to fracking or other oil stimulation? So, you know, jobs are hopefully local jobs, not people moving
imported
in from Texas.
Exactly. Although I understand North Dakota is having to do that because the demand is greater than the supply of workers.
Yeah, there is that concern here that we don't have enough trained workers.
So I maybe part
so,
of...
Some of the obviously, some of the companies and also the labor organizations know that there's going to have to be some training involved if this is going to be expanded at all.
Which would be, I would hope that would be a best case scenario. We've got jobs. We're going to train you so that you can do those jobs.
Yeah, the worst case scenario would be out-of-state people coming in to do the work,
mm-hmm.
oil companies exporting their oil to other countries who will pay them more,
mm-hmm.
and we pollute our groundwater and our air.
In the meantime.
Yeah.
That's a horrible worst-case scenario.
There's no win-win there.
Senator, thank you so much for your time this morning and for illuminating the process, and good luck with your legislation.
Well, thank you. It is a work in progress, but a very important subject, and thank you very much for your interest.
Of course. Thank you so much, Senator mm-hmm. Fran Pavley. And she is the author of SB4, and that's the Comprehensive Regulation of Fracking and Well Stimulation. And I should mention that I am on her advisory panel committee, whatever, we meet quarterly, I believe it is, and I'm just letting you know that. I find it very exciting, and I'll tell you why. I don't mind regulation, especially if it's in the higher interest for our betterment, for our society, for our culture, for our environment, for our state, etc. But if that gets done and it is regulated and it's safe for all, the possibility that California could become the great estate again and reclaim their its Gold Coast reputation. It is the world's eighth largest economy. Would be unbelievable to think that we might be independent. That would be so exciting. We are going to visit now with Kiki T. She is the world's only astrosexologist. She's going to be talking to us about the zodiac changes that occur every month, and she visits with us every month.
The Maria Sanchez Show, a conversation, not a confrontation, on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Hi, Kiki T. It's Maria Sanchez. You're live on the program. Good afternoon.
Hey, Maria.
To you.
How are you?
I'm excellent. It's always a great pleasure to hear your voice.
Oh, thanks.
You.
Even though it's sweltering hot in New York right now.
Yeah, you guys are making news with your weather. We in Southern California have been having a heat wave too, but I guess this is pretty unprecedented for you guys.
This is like the third heat wave of the summer.
Yikes.
I don't know.
Yeah, what's going on? And Kiki was going to visit with us tomorrow because that's closer to the zodiac change, but she's got a television gig instead. She's very famous and very popular, so we appreciate you adjusting your schedule accordingly, Kiki.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So we're going from Cancer to what?
Leo. So Leo is a sign of fire. It's a sign of performance. It's a sign of drama, passion, romance. So this is where the summer gets really hot.
And now when folks are listening, if they don't ascribe to astrology or they don't put a whole lot into it or they're not a Leo, what can you tell them? What does this mean in general to the population? Because my kids always say, how can you condense people into 1/12 of the, you know, I said something to my sons last night. They were over for dinner about, well, you know how Capricorns are. And they go, don't do that. No. So I understand what you do, but I don't know that everybody does. So share with us.
I mean, if we're just talking general, you know, it sets out like kind of a vibe. It's kind of like seasons of the year. It's like the sign is also kind of like a season. It kind of dictates certain things. Like summer brings on like the heat and like, you know, people are just more free because the climate is just it allows it. So it's kind of like astrology is the same thing. Like Leo is that just that time of year where people just tend to just kind of let it all hang out a little more. And it does happen to just correspond in the summer months. But, you know, it's like in the southern hemisphere, it's winter. So it still brings out that drama.
So go through what a traditional Leo sign is and then how it affects us in general.
Leo is a sign of drama, passion, it's a performer, it's a sign of leadership, it's a sign of ego. So when you deal with a Leo personality, you're dealing with someone that is very, very, not controlling, but dominant. You know, like Madonna, J-Lo, Mick Jagger, a lot of like showmen, you know, like performers that have succeeded throughout their lives, you know, throughout like reinventions and stuff. are, you know, Leos. So that kind of explains what a Leo personality is. It's someone that likes to be in the spotlight.
And then you talk about the moon rising also that affects the people's astrological signs and tendencies?
Yeah, rising sign. It's the time they're born.
And that's the moon?
Rising sign is the time of birth.
Okay, rising sign. So Kiki talks about it's not just your astrological sign, but the time that you were born, that also has, would you say, a secondary influence?
It's just as important, I would say.
Just as important. So
yeah,
not everybody...
It's based on your time you're born, so it's like more of a identity mark. It's like, you know, it's kind of... Everyone can be born on, like, you know, people who are born on the same day can have the same planets, but if they're, you know, like being born at a different time, it distinguishes, you know, how they are going to be in public. Because rising sign is like how you are with, you know, your public face.
How you're in public. So speaking of inventing themselves or reinventing themselves, why don't you let our listeners know about your journey?
What do you mean?
Well, because you've created something that didn't exist before, being an astrosexologist.
It's just basically focusing on the love and sex aspect of it. There's been people that do love and sex astrology, but, you know, I just kind of made the phrase. And so what exactly do you want to know about it? Like, I said the story, like, several times, so I don't, like, you know, it's like, to me, it's just, like, common knowledge, so I don't, what would be interesting for your listeners to know?
Well, one, that you did something that no one has done before. Two, that you coined a phrase that didn't exist before. And three, that you are not only successful, but you're getting known nationally through all of your media taps. So, in other words, you took something out of nothing. You had an interest, you had a passion, you had skills, and then you've made yourself something that nobody else has done in quite your way.
Oh, well... that's just like my Scorpio, Gemini, rising, Sagittarius. I mean, it just kind of all kind of, you know, it wasn't like a master plan or anything. It just kind of came together as I went along. It's like I graduated school. I was a writing major. And afterwards, I wanted to do something literary. But I had always been into astrology ever since I was 11 years old and obsessed with Simon Le Bon. And so when I graduated school, I bartended and I always asked people their signs. So this one girl that used to come in, she was interning at a magazine, and she was like, oh, you know, we were thinking of doing an astrology column, and you always talk about it and you're a writer, so why don't you pitch something? And that was the big, like, aha moment as far as, like, putting something together, pitching something, and having it click, you know. I didn't wind up working for the magazine. They didn't wind up going for it, but I knew how to put something together and pitch it. So I just kind of went through that, and then through the years, it just was the thing that kind of, because I didn't start off as an astrosexologist. I just did astrology, just like, you know, plain astrology, although there was, you know, for specific magazines that I worked for, I specified certain things. But the first real column I had was for a movie, for a movie theater, and I used movie quotes and made the horoscope like a movie review. And then when I got the job at Playgirl, that's when I really honed in on, like, being an astrosexologist and wanting to focus on the love and sex aspect of it, because that's how I got drawn into astrology.
Mm-hmm. And now your column, you write for Latina Cosmo, is it?
Cosmo for Latinas. I write for The Frisky every week, and on Look TV, Style by Sign is the show that I do on YouTube. And then also on astrology.com, I do a pop culture blog type of thing where I make a kind of like, oh, why did the stars do this or whatever. But I've made a prediction about the royal baby, and so I'm hoping that I'm going to be right, because I said that they were going to have a girl and it was going to be a Cancer, but now... It's like, now that we're getting closer into Leo time, which is going to be July 22nd, I'm like, oh, I hope I'm not going to be wrong on this, because I really just, like, want there to be a little girl that's a Cancer that looks like Diana. Diana was a Cancer.
Oh, interesting. Wouldn't that be something? I didn't realize that. Well, yeah. I guess she's due any day now, so you still have time for it to come to pass, right? 4 days or so.
They were saying that she was due on the 13th, but the 22nd is when the sun officially goes into Leo. I'm not sure the exact time. I have to look that up. But the baby, you know, the baby's grandmother, Kate's mother, was heard in public saying that my grandchild's going to be a Leo.
Oh.
So I'm like, oh, no, that baby needs to come early. Because I've been wrong about some predictions, and I don't, you know, it's like, oh, I've been right about certain things. I mean, you can't really predict, so, you know, it's like, because I feel like, you know, there's a lot of free will, and, you know, nobody knows everything. But
Right.
But this one, I've been, like, rooting in the beginning ever since they said, like, oh, it's going to be a Cancer, it's going to be a girl, it's going to look just like Diana.
Well, it could come to pass, Kiki, and last I checked, you're human, so you might be subject to error every now and then.
Okay, well, yeah. And William's also a Cancer, and I think also for Kate and William, it would be just a better match, because she's a Capricorn, which is the opposite of Cancer, which is complementary sign, and William is a Cancer, so that would just blend easily, and like, for them, I think it would just blend easier, and also blend in better with the rest of the royal family. Because they are all earth and water signs. So if there was a Leo that came into that family, things are going to be turned upside down.
Upside down.
Yes.
Well, I'll be curious when we speak next month to see if you're right. And now I'm going to watch it even more because I haven't really been paying attention. I just see the headlines that we're still waiting. We're still waiting. We're still waiting.
I'm just like, yeah, I've gotten sucked into it because of the whole, you know, astrology thing. But when I was growing up, I was completely into Diana. I thought she was just like the coolest thing and the luckiest girl in the universe because she got to meet Duran Duran.
You really did have a crush.
Yeah, like, I didn't want to be Charles, but I thought like her life was rocking.
Yes, yeah, it is unfortunate. Well, Kiki, continued success. Good luck tomorrow with your television gig, and thank you for taking the time to visit with us. Really
Thanks
appreciate your time.
Okay,
thank you, Kiki.
Bye.
Goodbye. Bye. Bye. She actually wrote a book too, The Astrosexologist's Guide to Love and Life, and I got that book when it was first published. Her people contacted me, and I had her on the program then. So a lot of our correspondents go way back, some 10 or 11 years that in different iterations with the radio program. So I appreciate her. And she revealed on this program, the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio, that I was her first radio interview, which, of course, I didn't know at the time. So she's always just, you know, it's I just get a big kick out of her. So does it seem like you're a mosquito magnet? A new report says that some of us are bitten more than others for several reasons. I used to be the magnet. Anytime we used to camp when I was growing up, but like tent camp around the fire and everything, the mosquitoes always came to me, and they said it was something about my blood. Well, the Smithsonian Magazine says that about 20% of us are more appealing than others to mosquitoes. The reasons? Alcohol. Just one bottle of beer can increase your appeal to the mosquitoes. Now, you can't say that I was guilty of that when I was a kid. So pregnancy. Pregnant women get bitten about twice as much as the rest of us. They say the body temperature of a pregnant woman is a degree warmer than the rest of us, and that they exhale 21% more carbon dioxide. So you couldn't say that about me. Blood type. Type O blood types are bitten twice as much as type A. And type B is somewhere in the middle. I'm type A, so you can't say that about us. Exercise. Working out builds up lactic acid in your sweat, making you a little more tasty. So that's the only one thing that I could say that follows in terms of me getting bitten more by mosquitoes. So we have a bittersweet story in the news today, too. It involves a former professional Olympian and a professional runner from Ethiopia who was 8 months pregnant. She died on Monday, and they were able to save the baby. She went into a restaurant to pick up takeout food. She walked into the restaurant and collapsed. She had her 2-year-old son with her. The paramedics are credited and firefighters with they performed CPR on her as they went to the hospital. When she was admitted to the hospital, again, this is on Monday, they were able to save the baby because of the CPR efforts. both in the restaurant and in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. So her name is Mascarem Legesse. She's 26 years old, was. She lived in Westport, Connecticut. She ran in the 1,500-meter competition at the Athens Olympics in 2004. She finished 12th in a first-round heat, and she didn't advance to the medal race, but she moved on to professional running career in the United States. And again, she has a 2-year-old son. And then the same story, it says she leaves her husband, Tom Laverty, and the 2-year-old son, and now the newborn. And then later on in the story, it says she was planning to get married to the children's fathers. So may she rest in peace. And this new baby has new life thanks to new medicine. Thank you so much for listening. Have a fabulous day. We look forward to visiting with you on Friday.